Hello, welcome back, y'all. Dr. Nicole Truesdell, as always, I'm your host and guide for this podcast, Abolitionist Dreamscape. So welcome. All right, y'all, this is episode 13. I'm here, you're here, we're here together as always. And as always, I appreciate y'all showing up with me in this bi-weekly schedule as I talk about all kinds of shit. And this time around, I got a little treat for y'all. It's going to be one of my longer episodes because I'm in conversation. This time I'm in conversation with Donnell A. McLaughlin. And if you follow me on my social media platforms like TikTok or Instagram, you may have also come across and or follow Donnell as well. He goes at Donnell Writes. And a lot of Donnell's work is looking at deconstruction from the church and hip hop scholarship and the nexus between the two, as he himself is going on his own deconstruction journey from being in the church since essentially birth. And so both of us have had conversations before talking about decolonization and spirituality, the Black church, the revolutions, and what it means to kind of have abolitionist moments of deconstruction so that we can imagine new futures. Well, this time around, we decided to do a little bit something different and do another love together that both of us share, which is a love of smoking up and talking some shit. So this is an episode that I call Thoughts While High. Now, back in the day, I did this by myself on the Tickety Talk. I talk about that in the conversation. And this time around, I thought it'd be a little bit more fun to do it with somebody that who I personally respect, but also we just have a good time when we have conversations together. And so Donnell and I, over the course of a little over an hour and some change, talk about our love of music, because both of us are music heads. He's a hip hop scholar, like I said, a little bit earlier. And I'm just a lover of music, and I'm experimenting with music more. And I'll have more about that coming up pretty soon with a collaborator and friend of mine. I'll have him on later on in the season. In which we're experimenting with music and sound and group meditation and abolitionist world building. So if you're in the Chicago area, look out for a in-person experience. It's going to be dropping in early June. But again, I'll be having more information about that and talking about that with my collaborator Forrest later on. But this time around, we're just talking about me and Donnell, just talking about music, talking about community, and then also talking about this present moment with in hip hop and what is going on with the Diddy Law suits. So I'm not going to give away too much. But that's the episode that's going to be coming up. Now, before I jump into that, I'm going to do a little bit of housekeeping. So if you want, you can go ahead and just jump to the conversation. So thank you for staying if you're still here with me. All right. So there's different ways to support my work. And for those who have been able to support my work, both monetarily and non-monetarily, as always, it is greatly appreciated. So I do have a Patreon called Abolitionist Dreamscapes as well, in which I talk about all kinds of things, from breaking societal structures that don't work for us by understanding what those structures are, to dreaming of new worlds by coming back into the body and understanding that our bodies are elemental. So when you become more aware, when you become more quote unquote woke, you are essentially becoming more human. And in that humanity, we must understand that we have a relationship to and responsibility for that relationship with other forms of life. So I talk about ancestors, I talk about the elements, nature, veneration, and other things like that on my Patreon. So if you're interested in that, I got tiers starting as low as $5 all the way up to $100. And that is the space that I am building, essentially what I would call my own idea of a freedom school, by having us really understand the relationship between breaking and dreaming. So you can find out more on my Patreon, okay? I also have a Substack of the same name, Abolitionist Dreamscapes, in which I essentially talk about the same things within my writing. And so building my archive of writings and reflections there as well. So I have both free and paid essays and short write-ups there. And it is essentially another space, a kind of a newsletter of sorts as well for me, for folks who want to kind of be up to date with certain events and offerings that I have going on. So you can subscribe to my Substack there as well. Now, I also have a consulting and coaching business, Truesdell & Associates, in which I work primarily with leaders, tend to be mainly Black and queer leaders in various industries and also different departments and organizations and offices within different industries who are needing either cultural assessments or need help in revisioning and reworking the structures and policies and procedures and or programming being offered. So you can find out more in my offerings and how to work with me on my website, drnicoletruesdell.com. And lastly, I have a program that I am launching August 8th. Now, this is called Believe Your Reality. It's a very limited program. It's for 6 Black women leaders who are at a crossroads in their work in which you are needing to strategize differently because you are starting to believe the reality of the organization you're in and you're trying to figure out the crossroads where to go next. And so I am offering a program called Believe Your Reality. It's a 2-month program in which I'll have 3 live Zoom sessions with cohorts that go over various topics like what it means to believe and then break the strong Black woman trope. How do you take back your time once you understand the space you are in? And when you can understand that the institutions that you are a part of are parts of these systems that are rooted in plantation economies, when you believe that reality, how do you then center your sense of self, center your humanity as a way to strategize so that when you are walking in these spaces, you understand that you are walking into a space that is dirty. And because it is dirty, it is coded in the foundations of the nation state. What does it mean then to protect yourself by being grounded in your sense of self, grounded in your body and bringing that body logic alive? How do you work with that as a means to strategize through a human-based lens, no matter what industry you're in? So I talk about that through the Zoom lessons, along with having opportunity to do one-on-one coaching with me through this program called Believe Your Reality. So if you are interested in that, please check out my website, drnicoletruesdell.com. There's a short application to fill out when you sign up. And it's professional development. So if you have professional development funds, then you can use that for this program. And if you need more documentation or information, you can also find out ways to reach out to me again at drnicoletruesdell.com. Okay. I think that's it for now. You'll find anything else that I need to talk about in the show notes below. And as always, again, I appreciate your support. So let's now go to the conversation between me and Donnell called Thoughts While High, a conversation on music, community, and what it means to dream in this present moment. All right, I got a little treat for y'all today. So today I'm talking with the incomparable, the amazing writer, theologian, husband, teacher, storyteller, and weaver, the Donnell A. McLaughlin. Did I say that right?
Okay, here we go.
See, I'm proud of myself. Now, this is going to be a little new, y'all. So we're experimenting here. We're playing and we're creating. And this is going to be an episode called Thoughts While High. So if you follow me on TikTok, I used to do this back in the day when I first got on. I did a little 3-minute segments of Thoughts While High where I basically smoked a little weed, talked about some shit until it focused on my mind. And when I was talking with Donnell back in December, we were talking about, I was talking about how I miss doing that. And Donnell's like, you know, I actually like that show a lot. It cracked me up. And I said, well, why don't we do one together then? Mm-hmm. We both like a little weed. We like to talk shit. And we can tell folks what's on our minds together. And so here we are today doing this for y'all. So Donnell, I would like you to introduce yourself, though, and how you would like to be in this space. So who are you and why are you here?
My name is Donnell. Just that. White folks pronounce it differently than white folks, but it's Donnell. And I'm in this space to, as your cousin, as your co-laborer, as your comrade in the struggle for liberation, to learn and to grow and to expand consciousness and have discourse with other brilliant minds. And that's what finds me always at the feet of Dr. Nicole Truesdell. So I'm grateful to be here. Excited to have the conversation.
All right. Thank you, Donnell. Well, let's get into it, y'all. So before we got on, we were talking about some things that interest us both, right? And one thing is that we both love music. Now, Donnell does a lot of hip-hop scholarship, but also music himself. And then me, I pretend I can sing, but I love me a good playlist.
Me too.
And I love working with music, and I've been experimenting with music. Stay tuned for that, y'all. Stay tuned. I'm experimenting with some things with music and sound and stuff with somebody. So as a way to incorporate it into my work. But that got me thinking about what we're seeing in the news right now, right? So we got a whole bunch of things going on in hip hop right now with what people are calling the hip hop Epstein with what's going on with P. Diddy, mm-hmm. right? And it's not good at all. Like, it's things that people have talked about for years. People talked about it, have been rumored, right? But when you really get into it and read it, or at least even listen to people who have read it, right? If you can't get into it, there's a trigger warning. Yeah. There's a goddamn trigger warning. On and anything against Diddy lately has hit a trigger warning on it. That's a problem, like for the court documents, right? There's a lot of shit going on, like from sexual assault to human trafficking to child trafficking, right? To abuse, to all this stuff. But then when you listen to how some folks are talking about all of the charges and what is being levied against Diddy, they're not focusing on that. Right. Instead, they're focused. Right. What are they focused on, Donnell?
They're focused on sexuality. I go on Twitter and I see Meek Mill is trending number 3 in the United States. Now, I told y'all, Dr. Nicole Truesdale told y'all I'm a hip hop historian. So I know Meek Mill from battle rapping in Philly. I used to go on YouTube as a kid and watch Meek Mill in the streets of Philly with nappy braids.
Really?
Like battle rapping against other Philadelphia rappers. And so that's how long I've known of Meek Mill's work and what he's been doing and his kind of come up in music. So I, as a fan, I'm like, okay, let me see what's going on. And it's all this discourse about, you know, Meek Mill and P. Diddy having sexual relations or, you know, and stuff like that. And the whole conversation everyone is talking about is Meek Mill being gay. Meek Mill is on a 50-tweet tirade. Talking about how they keep doing this to black men and, you know, they just trying to distract you from my music and blah, blah, blah. Not just saying, nah, that's, you know, that's not true. That's fine. But that's just not true. He goes on a 50, you know, tweet tirade about, you know, all this because he's being literally bullied on the internet because all people are talking about is him being gay. That's the entire conversation.
That's it. And that's all I'm focused on, right? And mm-hmm. and then people talking about who, and then people are using these words, honestly, that I ain't heard since the 90s. Like, I'm an 80s baby, right? You a bit mm-hmm. younger than me, so we on the old and young millennial spectrum, mm-hmm. literally. And so it's like, I ain't heard some of these words since like the 80s and 90s. Like, people talking about them being fruity. And I'm like, what? Like, just, I'm sitting here, like, I was talking to my friend about this.
The new one is zesty.
Zesty, right? Sassy. Like, that's not new, y'all. We heard that shit back in the day as well, mm-hmm. right? And so, but it reminds me of something, like, of how, like, I talk a lot about time being in loops and shit, you know? Mm-hmm. And we can see how much of a loop it's in because I feel like the rhetoric is back in the 90s again. You know what I'm saying? You know how a height of the beginning of hip hop, and it was starting to dominate, but also high homophobia, right? Overall in society, and then also in the music itself, right? Mm-hmm. Not just that, and in rock and stuff like that, you know, like, and you feel, it feels so familiar because it's like, we can't even do 2024 homophobia, right? We still do in 1990s. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's boring at this point, but it's dangerous, but it's boring. Same shit.
It's the same conversations, the same kind of bullying, nitpicking behavior. Like, if you go on Twitter, it feels like you're literally watching a child get bullied. Like, but in the words that they're using, zesty, fruity, he got some sugar in his tank. All, you know, all those types of conversations. Like, I always felt like he had some sugar in his tank. You know, people are saying these are the conversations that we're having, not about P. Diddy's power. You know, as the head of, you know, an industry that has the power to influence career outcomes and how he was leveraging that power to harm people.
Yes.
Men, women, whoever.
Yes.
That's not the conversation. We're talking about sexuality. Like, we're still stuck on that.
And that actually then leads to the underlying issue, right? Is that one of the main ways that Diddy was even able to have that power is because of the embedded homophobia, queerphobia within society,
yes.
Right? And then so if this does not show us that how dangerous these oppressive systems are to all of us, he was able to use and weaponize that to have power over everybody.
Goodness.
Right. When you hit the margins, y'all, this is a great example of when you don't understand how the oppressor sits in you, that motherfucker will show up and rear its ugly head almost worse within the oppressed themselves, because now they have even more spaces to hide, you know, in the open. Because mm-hmm. people been talking about this, right? Let's be real. We've been hearing this shit since the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and this also shows us, if we think about it, Donnell, how short collective memory is now too. You know what I mean? Like we don't realize how much, because everything is so everything is shortened. We think that because we have all this information out there that we know things.
Yeah.
People don't know shit. We having the same conversation. You know what I'm saying? We've had this, like, you could, if you listen to some old school conversations between, who was it? It was like Cornel West and was it Sister Soulja?
Yeah.
You know, right? She was talking about this then.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? All these kind of different aspects of it, but we don't have the kind of collective memory because it's purposely cut short. But also, we don't have the media literacy. So here we are again, 2024. This motherfucker has done some messed up things: murder, right? Like kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is some, y'all want to glorify the mafia, but this is some mafia type cartel shit. Y'all glorify all this shit, but here is what it looks like, right? And these are who are affected, people that you think are, right? Now, isn't it Young Miami? Ain't she now indicted too, or a part of this whole thing as well? Like,
I mean, yeah, I think they were in a relationship for a long time, or on and off, on again, off again type thing. I did not know that she was involved. That's crazy.
That was some stuff, like, it's crazy, you know, allegedly, like, I want to make sure allegedly, I'm just, but like, this is all, it shows the, how violent, when you let these systems just sit and you don't interrogate how you contribute to them, like, what's our responsibility in this moment as the collective, right? Mm-hmm. We want to talk about collective power, and I think about, I'm an astrologer, right? So I think about Pluto and Aquarius and folks talking about power to the people. Yo, come on now. You got to actually put some action into the power. There's mm-hmm. only power when you have action behind it. And right now, the action just seems to be the same shit. We're going to focus on the superficial homophobic shit, right? Transphobic shit, as a way to skirt our own responsibility and how we also uphold these violent systems. Because sometimes I feel like folks are making the excuse because you would do what Jitty did in one way, shape, or form.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what you don't want to also look at it and admit to. That's why you're going around and doing all this stuff. So I think that we have to really look at how a dangerous, like, truly understand how dangerous queerphobia, homophobia, transphobia truly is for all of us, because it does impacted everybody in the music industry.
I didn't realize, I didn't think about it that way in terms of, like, how you mentioned that he was able to use the queer, like, the homophobic nature environment to leverage that power, because, like, the shame around it is so deep.
Yes.
That, like, people aren't going to say anything, even if it's, like, true. Like, I would never admit out loud, like, over my dead body will I admit.
Yes.
Because the depths of the queer phobia that you inherit from the church, from society, from the school, from everywhere, the fucking government, like, that is real. And it shows up in the way of, like, you're not going to say anything as a man if another man, you know, allegedly violates you.
Yes. Right. So what the latest, what's that? What's the man's name? The producer that has the lawsuit out now.
Oh, I forgot the name of the producer.
That's actually brave, right? Because you're breaking through and you're just admitting, like, no, I was violated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, that's because the thing is, we talk about, people want to, and this is where we also have to understand the violence of patriarchy, right? Of a Christian white patriarchy. This is how this shows up within non-white bodies, right? This is how this shit shows up. Because now I've also seen conversations talk about, well, you realize now they're only going after Black men. You know, isn't it interesting how they go after Black men?
I'm so tired of that shit.
I'm so tired. Thank you. We're going back to the 90s once again, Donnell. Right, Donnell? Thank you. It's the same conversations we've been had. And I know our elders know, girl, we would have had this shit back in the 70s. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, we keep having these same reductive ass loop ass conversations because the underlying issue is y'all don't want to give up the structures themselves. You want to become the embodiment of the structure. Mm-hmm. So we got to believe these people when they say this shit and be like, oh, I can't trust you either. Then you just, this is what it is right now. We're in a situation where people are showing us and telling us that they rather focus on, oh, it's only black men now getting called out, or, oh, he little fruity. Like, you know what I'm saying? Versus this man ran a whole ass cartel, like in the public. And had support and public view for decades and paraded it in front of our faces and then used us as the populace who were supporting and funding it.
And knew that y'all wasn't going to say shit because
Thank you. Because this
is the, you know, the environment, the especially around queerphobia, homophobia. It's like no one's going to admit that this is what's going on.
Not at all.
Like, and then like all the videos are resurfacing of Diddy, like, you know, in interviews or in moments, or there's a video of him in his office saying like, I get what I want, whatever I want, I take it. Like that's a mentality. That's the mindset of the colonizer. Yes. Like, you know what I'm saying? Hey,
Remember how glorified that was though? Because think about it. It was glorified for us. That was what we were told to aspire to, because remember back in the day, we also had MTV, when MTV actually was MTV and like showed like music videos, but also had those, started making music shows, right? And all those, and that's when you started seeing reality shows come in through MTV, right? So not just the Real World and stuff, but then like they were showing the celebrity culture, and that's where Diddy really shined with all that shit, right? You had all of that. That was glorified. And then from there going into hustle culture, shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was what we were told we were supposed to do. And then when he had, remember making the band? The first making the band? When he had them walk across that goddamn bridge for 6 miles for a cheesecake?
Yeah.
Right? And then that was glorified and said, that's what you got to do to make it in the game.
Like, how bad do you want it? Like, what the
fuck? Oh,
my God.
That's crazy. That is insane.
Even the whole like whatever I want, I get, like that mentality of
that mentality, like
that, like that we condemn and we recognize historically.
That's rape culture.
It's violent. And
yes, literally, that's what it is. But y'all want to talk about it just being fruity?
He just did it to other people instead of nations.
And he did it to black folks in particular. Let's not get it focused, right? So let's also bring in the race card too. This is how anti-blackness shows up, and he used that shit to his advantages too, right? Damn. Same for R. Kelly. Who cares about the black girl, especially a young black girl, young black boy? You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think this is how we gotta understand. What's he? Thank you. We always call little black girls fast, right? I remember being called fast at 10. Because I was big. I mean, shit, I hit 6 foot by the time I was in like fifth, sixth grade. I was just a big ass girl, right? And that was back in the day when like only thing you had to buy was
6 feet in what grade?
It was like sixth grade. It was so bad.
Wow.
I was so tall and I was fat too, so only place I had to shop, because back in the day, so this is like the late 80s, early 90s, they ain't got no damn clothes, right? And like I would try to go to Rainbow, but they didn't really have a plus size section yet. And so I had to go to like Lane Bryant. This is old school Lane Bryant with like the chiffon and shit, so like I didn't have shit to wear. I thought I was just a big bitch. I'm getting called fast and it's like, no, I'm just but yeah, no, anyway. But what were we talking about? Oh yes, let's take it back, y'all. So we're taking it back. But yeah, but for real, but like this is how this shit shows up, right? And so we gotta take responsibility as a collective right now and stop reproducing these reductive ass loops. But also we gotta remember, like, part of how power keeps going like it is it goes through the people that it hurts the most, and it keeps our memories short. So we keep having these fucking conversations. This is why I can't stand these goddamn traveling podcast bros and shit on these goddamn relationship conversations. Y'all, this is boring right now. What is that gonna do when you ain't got no damn house to live in?
It's boring and it's useless.
It's useless. Like, as an educator, I'm sorry. There are pointless and distractive questions at these points. We got to stop this shit.
Yes,
not everybody needs to be at the table.
They're especially pointless and distracting when they're being had by people who are not qualified to have those conversations, who don't have the depth to have those conversations.
Don't.
Okay, you still relying on an antiquated framework of the nuclear family as the basis and the foundation of your conversation. Then you don't have the depth for it.
Right. That's what we have to believe, right? And so, but this is what I always tell folks too. When somebody has to bring you back to the same conversation over and over again, you have to understand that is the only argument they have. So when you bring out another issue or another way and you want to have the conversation, when there's nothing left in the tank, they will bring you back to what they know, mm-hmm. right? That's the loop. So in order to break the loop, you got to break the goddamn conversation. You just got to have the conversation. That's why I'm sorry. That's why I don't have those. I don't believe in debating, right? So this is why debating is bullshit, y'all. Okay. Debating is bullshit. Debating is a tool literally of colonization to justify the idea of objectivity as being somehow a universal concept that you can use and deploy to justify the most heinous acts in the world. Okay. That is what a debate forces you into a binary. It forces you into a binary conversation. And then you have to do all this research and then you have to use tactics to deploy a logic to have you reinforce this binary, right? Like it doesn't take you anywhere. So debating then will always have you if one person only has one or two arguments. They love a fucking debate because they'll take you right back into that motherfucker over and over, right? So you have to just break the shit, right? I can't keep having these reductive ass conversations that are basically saying that you are okay with anti-blackness, misogynoir, homophobia, classism, really. It's just that you want to sensationalize this because now you can capitalize off the motherfucking story.
Man. I used to go on TikTok, used to feed me these debates of people going back and forth or Christians debating with people who don't believe in Christianity.
Oh, God.
And like, but they kept sending me this shit. I was like, I kept hitting not interested, but my problem is I stay there and watch for a little bit because, you know, I grew up. So I'm like, I kind of want to see what the arguments is. What is Christian TikTok? How are they defending and upholding, you know, white Christian supremacy today? And you're right. It's like it's this loop. And like there's these little gotchas and like the, you know, person is just, it's a shouting match. But like no one's really listening to each other, especially as a Christian. Like you just assume that, you know, you have all the answers. So like, this is not really a debate. This is you trying to evangelize through debating.
Yes.
Like, introducing them to Christian ideas and concepts and the hopes that they will change their mind about something.
Yes. You know,
like there's no winner. Everyone loses.
Thank you. Everyone loses. And there's no space for real difference then, mm-hmm. right? So, and I think that's my biggest problem. I think actually it's what a lot of people's problems are. They just made me understand it through this. That's how I understand it, at least I should say, is that a conversation should really allow us to have like an underlying premise that we're building a table around. Like there should be allowed differences of understanding of how to engage with something. This is why I really do like that conversation with the black intellectuals from the 1970s. I think it was like Fannie Lou Hamer was on it and Angela Davis, Kwame Ture, who else was on it? A couple of other folks as well. I can't think right now. But like, cause they didn't necessarily have the same perspectives, but the underlying conversation was around black thought and black radical thought at that time, especially as they were pushing back against an imperialist state. So that overall was like, they all agreed with living in an imperialist settler ass state. Right. So what does
There's
it mean?
There's an agreement
to,
there. Yeah.
Right. So like, what does it mean to then build a conversation with understandings of we're going to have to talk through some things, but there's different ways we can do it, right? But this is the thing. We don't know how to handle difference, especially now, because these conversations have been so goddamn reductive over and over and over mm-hmm. again. It's like it's shortened people's attention and ability to handle breaking that enough to allow differences to sit and understand that there's going to be different ways to do it. But what's the underlying premise? See, mm-hmm. we don't even want to agree on that. Like, do we all agree that this shit ain't working?
Yeah.
Right. Can we at least agree with that first?
I was just going to say, like, the basis of people's conversation is different. Like, we're arguing from a different foundation. Some people are arguing for the maintenance of the system. And it just needs some tweaks and some minor changes.
Yes.
And, you know, if we just show up to the polls and if we just show up to the local elections, and again, not poo-pooing that altogether, but just saying, like, that's the conversation. Some people are invested in keeping the status quo and just
right.
somehow improving it. Or some people are realizing fundamentally that this is not sustainable and it's not working. It hasn't worked for a long time. And how do we build some new shit? How do we build something different?
Yes. Yes. Can we get to motherfucking creating something new? Can we sit around like have a drink? This is my thing about when people talk about, we're going to switch some topics real quick. This is why I have irritation right now with social media. I was talking to you about this earlier. Like, this is why social media is irritating me. My algorithm needs to change up because, like, I can't handle these conversations either between, like, the libs and the leftists, the conservatives, the whatever the fuck else it is, right? They're irritating because it's the same fucking conversation, right? Like, what are we creating? Like, that's what I want to have a conversation about. Like, if mm-hmm. we can agree, because the thing is, even all of them motherfuckers are agreeing that it ain't working. From whatever perspective it is, it ain't working, mm-hmm. right? But they're all stuck in the same binary loop, and they're all stuck in one way or another in a conservative logic, right? Like, we know the conservative logic. They just want to go straight authoritarian. But I think that's real cute and funny because, again, if we remember Reaganomics, right? And the conservatives from the 80s, they were about what? Small government, right? Mm-hmm. States' rights, right? So they said that shit didn't work. So they took a real quick pivot. Said, cool, all right, boo, all right. We're going to behind the scenes plan two. Ooh, though. If that shit don't work, we're just going to take over, right?
Just take over the whole shit.
Let's take it all over, right? Like, but the thing is, you know what the thing is, though? They've been saying this. They said we're going to do one or two things. Either we're going to take away power and put it locally, or we're going to take all over, right? So they deploy. Obviously, they go on route two, and they said, fuck it, we're just going to go straight authoritarian.
January 6th. That's what that was.
That's what that was.
Like, right. It's time. Yeah, it's not
it's
working.
Let's, like, boom.
Where's the president? We want to actually hang the vice president. Can we arrange that?
We're just going to do that real quick, right? We're going to put ahead real quick, right? So they're pretty clear about what they want to do. But like, when you go to the leftists and the liberals right now, it's just this like, is the conservatism shows up in the purity, right? In one way, shape, or form. So the purity is in the idea of people need to still toe the party line. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what they say. There's some logics going out there people are trying to use saying that it's not true. People are saying vote blue no matter who. Y'all need to stop that. You know, you full of shit. Now, you need to stop.
All I have seen. That's the majority.
We
got to
stop that.
I've seen.
Thank you. Like, let's stop that. Let's stop trying to do these mental back, you know, intellectual, like, because the thing, you know what it reminds me of? You know what? I think it's triggering, Donnell, because you also work in academia. It's reminding me of a motherfucking faculty senate meeting. It's reminding me of a faculty senate meeting in which a bunch of faculty are sitting there arguing about a damn comma or a period in the damn faculty handbook because of so-and-so's third Dewey Decimal System law. You know, I swear to God, that's what it reminds me of. Like, it's mm-hmm. like, y'all not doing what you think you're doing, what I think you're doing, right? It's like this mind game of you trying to still just telling us to pull the party line. To me, that's a purity politic. That's a reductionist of saying, like, no, this is a binary. We're going to stay here. And then the leftists, like, there's this, like, it's like a purity, like, of, like, well, if you don't do it exactly as I think you do it, then you're an op, right? Mm-hmm. Or that you're not doing it right. So therefore, you're not doing it at all. Like, it's this weird pessimism. Does that make sense? Like, am I making any sense? Like, it's like this
pessimism?
Weird pessimism. Yeah. It's like this weird, like, we're gonna idealism, pessimism. If that makes sense.
And the party, like, the belief in the party and belief in, like, you know, them doing or are like towing the party line and contributing to that and the maintaining of that system.
Yeah, but also just like, it's like, if we can't do it exactly perfectly, then fuck it, don't do it at all. So that whole, like, when people are trying to get together over coffee and shit, and then people were saying like, well, if it's not perfectly done, you can't do it at all. And, you know, can we trust people to like go out and this is like an op, and everything's an op now, right? And basically it's people, you have social anxiety. People have social anxiety and they don't want to admit they have social anxiety. So instead of realizing that they have to go out and touch grass and talk to other people if they want to truly build like community and shit and mutual aid,
yeah,
all of a sudden everything is like, well, I can't trust that initiative because it's an op, or I can't trust that because it's like, y'all, come on now. Like, what do you really want? Like, what is this? Like, what is, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is this?
I really feel like we are... not enough people are, I think people are having the conversation about the impact of like technology and, you know, all that stuff on how we interact to one another, and just like the increasing of social anxiety, our inability to like, you know, have conversations with people, especially since the pandemic too. Like that, I feel like that also hit us really hard in terms of our ability to connect to one another. There's just a lot of anxiety about a lot of different things, including sickness, including, you know, mistrust. There's a lot of mistrust. You don't know who to, you know, trust anymore these days. And I feel like that's been intentionally sowed into kind of like the society and the times now through media, through all these different modes. We're like, we're in a time now where we're more connected than ever, but also more disconnected than ever. And that kind of, it really feels like there's a lot of like kind of irrational fears that are showing up because of that, and anxiety that are showing up that make us, that make people, you know, have a harder time connecting to one another. Like, how are you experiencing that? Or
I think I agree with that. I think for me, it's, I've had to learn how to rethink what it means to build community, right? And what community even means for and to me. And I think that's what we're all being forced to have to do, is that we're going to have to realize, and I do agree, the lockdowns, the COVID, the lack of trust in anything, right? Like, of what to believe, what not to believe, who to believe and stuff, has really broken a lot of our abilities to connect together. Mm-hmm. But I would also argue that before all of that, connections were already broken. Right. We have our collective memory is very short. I think that's on purpose. I think that's both a tool employ of current power structures to keep you always both never, not really present, but always short-sighted. Again, these conversations and loops, right? We go back in these weird loops, but at the same time, like, we have to remember before all of this, hustle culture and the grind and the startups and the constant growth, like capitalism was getting out of true control. Mm-hmm. And that was heavily impacting our relationships, right? How many of us during the lockdowns had to move again, right? Move back. Many people talked about great migrations again, of having to realize what was important to them or not, because they, in lockdown times, they were away from home, away from community, away from family, away from anything, right? I think we have to remember that it was already broken, like it was cracked. It was very fundamentally cracked. We were all living in this illusion and lie that if we just did something a little bit more different, it would change, but it wasn't, right? And then it broke. Right? Society has broken. But it was always going to break because capitalism was stealing everything. It stole our connections. It stole our ability to slow down, to be. So I think now that overall, because we are having to be more conscious of ourselves, of our bodies, quite frankly, like, we do have to be clear about what we're feeling, how we're feeling. There needs to be an understanding of precautions around COVID and other respiratory illnesses, because at the end of the day, our bodies are finite. This is what we've been learning for the past few years, right? Of our finite bodies. Mm-hmm. But we're also having to learn that we need one another. Like, so this is the conundrum, right? We're learning that we have, our bodies are finite. So this idea of hustle and grind makes no sense. This idea that if your body, if you got a long haul, you got motherfucking long haul. So now you're understanding with folks who have disabilities their whole damn life have been talking about, right? And the lack of care and access. But also you're understanding the need to have care and access networks. Like, we need one another.
We do.
Like, that's also one of the biggest things we learned. And we also learned we needed what? What was the biggest thing that people turned to during those times? It was entertainment.
Yeah.
And creativity, right? It was like, and it's not to romanticize it at all. It's to really put at the table the duality of it, mm-hmm. right? And I think this also shows how much the binary cuts into our kind of conversations, right? And our ability to really just kind of sit in the muck and the mess of being human, because there was a duality in all of that. Millions died and we still have to grieve. Millions more are now disabled in one way, shape, or form. Many of us are. Really, anyone who has been impacted, has had COVID, you are now put. You, there's one way your body is changed. We don't know mm-hmm. how it's going to impact us as we get older, right? We don't. We still don't know, right? We are having our kids. We have no idea how this is going to make an impact our ability to act as how we were taught we're supposed to act and perform as humans, right? So we're having to really sit and grapple with new realities. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And so then the care comes in. So who's caring for you and why? And who do you care for and why? Now really fucking matters too. So that's the duality of it. Like mm-hmm. that's the fucking messiness. So like we have to grapple with then what does it mean to understand what a collective is? And the way individualism is showing up now, I think, is through the utilization. People don't get pissed at me when I say this, okay? But it is what it is. Individualism and capitalism is showing up once again in its weaponization and utilization of therapy language now. Right. And how it's so out there now. And we are more aware. Again, we have more information. More information does not make us more conscious in society.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it does not make us a more empathetic. It just gives us more information. But what are you filtering it through? Right. I think that's what we're coming up. And I think that's where we're also having these realities collide with people's reactions to things like what's going on in Gaza, going on in Congo, going on in Sudan, but also going on here, quite frankly. Right.
Yes.
And what has been going on here. Let's not be arrogant, y'all. The U.S. is fucked up, too. Right. In different ways. Like. So I'm rambling now. But you know what I'm trying to say? Like, yes. it's just this, like.
How individualism is showing up in therapy language. I was thinking about that, especially when it comes to, like, you know, connecting in community and stuff like that. Like, it seems like a lot of the guidance is about, like, making sure that you're, you know, protecting your, you know, setting boundaries and protecting right. your peace and, you know, putting you first and cutting people off if necessary and making sure that you are prioritizing your sanity and, you know, dealing with your anxiety. But it's like, how can we exist in community if that is the default thing? And how do we deal with the nuances of, yes, we might have anxiety around these people or this person, but this is also a person who's, you know, also impacted by these systems that we're trying to, you know, reimagine. And how can we build together towards something? Despite, you know, any differences or any anxieties one might have, how do we hold both? Because we can, we've held both for a long time. Historically, we've held both, and
mm-hmm.
so if it's been done before, it's possible. We just have to get there. That's why I was watching that an interview with Toni Morrison. She was just talking about we know what we have to do. Mm-hmm. We just have to get there. We just have to. And I'm getting chills thinking about it because it's so simple, but it's like, we do know that we need one another. We know that we need community. We know that this shit isn't working. We know, you know, that these empires will lay waste to us at the, you know, we know all this information is already out there. We're the most informed generation, you know, ever because of the age of technology. So we know what we have to do and what we need and what is right and what is true. We just have to get there. We know what we have to do. And so what does getting there look like? And that's something that I'm definitely challenging myself on, you know, every day. It's like, what does getting there look like for me? What does, you know, cultivating community look like for me?
What is it though? Let's dream. This is why I talk about dreaming so much, right? Abolitionist dreamscapes, right? Because we can break the ship, we got to dream at the same time. So like, what is community look like for you? Let's not even do look. Let's bring it back to music. What does community sound like for you?
Like, what does it sound like? Noises?
However you want, let your imagination go. However you want to interpret that. Okay, you're the hip hop scholar. You're the hip hop artist. Come on, you know how to flow and be. What does the community sound like for you?
Community sounds like the sizzle of the grill, and some good music and some chatter, and laughter. Community sounds like community sounds like I don't know. I think that's where I'm at right now. I'll leave it there. That's what community sounds like.
Well, that's a good start, right?
Because that's you the whole. To add to that, or
for me?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I've been thinking about this a lot. So community for me sounds like a DJ set and hearing people as they like literally dance to the music. So I hear feet and I hear other people singing and I hear the kind of breeze in the back that is kind of hot because there's so many bodies there. Like it's like bodies together swaying is for me community.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the important piece, right? We have to dream. We have to start figuring out I go to sound because when we think, and it can start to bind us. But what does it feel like? What does it taste like? What does it sound like? What is it, you know, what does it look like? You know, I think those kind of senses, it gets the body in so that we remember that we got a body, right? And I think that helps with community because I'm realizing something too. We talked about this in my Patreon, actually. This is so funny. We just talked about this in my Patreon a week or two ago. Is that for me, community is also messy. So this is why that purity shit's got to go away, right? Like sometimes the person that you go that's going to rock with you ain't going to be the person that you think it is. And so like this is where, and I love my people, but this is where the justice spaces can really get you fucked up because you're like, well, I need a person who's got to be ABC. They can't be so-and-so. Okay, but what do you actually want? Like, you know what you don't want, but what do you want? Like who you want to break bread with? For me, it's like, I need to be able to break bread with you. I need to be able to have a meal with you. I need to be able to have a drink with you. You ain't gonna always be alcoholic. We need to be able to have a drink together. We need to be able to, if we have a smoke together, right? This is why I like to do the smoke and talk and drink. And like, you know, I need to be able to break bread with you because that to me is a very intimate act.
Yeah.
And it is a very human act, right? And this is where I can get to know you, get to know me, right? Because that's when you relax, the contradictions come out, but we're all contradictory. That doesn't have to be bad. You just see somebody for who they are and they can see you. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think for me, community feels like I can feel or sounds like, or, you know, feels like vulnerability. Like it feels like I can be so in my body that all of me comes out. Right. All like it all can come out in a way where it can also be safe and replicated back to me with you so that we're no, even in our mess, that even if I don't fuck with you in a few years, I can still hold that. You know what I mean? Or something happens where it's naturally and we break apart because we move. I can still hold that because we had that, you know what I'm saying? We had that space together. So 100%. I think that's in me, you know, we got to allow mess in, y'all, you know, and I think that's what I'm doing right now is really allowing myself to be messy. Oh, yeah, I guess a little messy for me, right? Because it's me exploring myself, right? Like, and exploring what it means to, like, be with others who are just messy as well. And not in a nasty way you a petty way, but, like, just in a human way.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to, like, do this. I thought it would just be a really good opportunity for us to chill in a different way. And you're right. Like, I feel like going back to therapy language, I think therapy language also kind of conditions us to those feelings of discomfort, and that messiness is like inherently bad.
Right.
And it's like, no, like, and it's like I do feel like I've kind of been trained at the, like, to feel like a discomfort from people having a significant difference from me, or like having a, you know, different belief, or existing in a different way, or doing something that I wouldn't do. And I'm, you know, of course it's not about, I don't want people to be like me, but I do expect people to have the same, you know, I do have a, you know, tend to lean purist when it comes to my, you know, beliefs around, you know, just humanity and you know, inclusivity and all these different things, compassion, justice, that sort of stuff. But I've kind of like, I feel like I've have been trained a little bit to run from the discomfort of being met with someone who, you know, may have a difference in that way. And instead of like leaning into it and like accepting the messiness of that and dealing with the nuance of that, I kind of like, you know, tend to, I feel like I've been trained to deem that inherently bad.
But think about it, Donnell. Okay, so folks that don't know, me and Donnell and I have had, I think I said it earlier, I'm high shit, I forgot. And then me and Donnell had, I had two or previous conversations about deconstruction and spirituality and the like. But if you think about it, Donnell, right, isn't it interesting because the lessons of Jesus is that he accepted difference. He accepted prostitutes at his table. He accepted the poor at his table. He accepted the lepers at, like, right? Tax collectors, right? He flipped tables in his daddy's house and said, what you're not going to do is be hustling over here when you got poor folks out there, right? Like, so the tenets of is acceptance of difference, but the training of it is to not accept difference if they don't, because it is about the disciplining of you conforming to a certain thing, right?
Yes.
Right. You see what I'm saying? Right. Yes. And so we see it showing up. So this is how this shit shows up in society. Right. It's an energy.
Ooh,
right. It's an energy and spirit. Right. This is all. This is why I talk about spiritual warfare. People think you might think I'm crazy, but I don't mean I'm wrong.
Damn.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the spirit of it, and it shows up in how it becomes. So this is honestly, if you think about it, too, this is why Brene Brown got her ass handed to her when she put out that lukewarm statement about her stance on the, what she's quote unquote, the Israel-Hamas war, made a whole career about vulnerability, but yet couldn't deploy her own concept in a real life situation because she was still filtering it through that purist lens that was still favoring the state, right? You still favoring a kind of kowtowing to that kind of patriarchal Christian way of being, right? You just put it through a lens of kindness. Right, as vulnerability, you water down radical Black and womanist thought, right? So this is where, if we think about it and building community, we gotta learn how to be good heathens, right? This is about being a good heathen, not instead of trying to feed the good Christian. Because the Christian don't want difference at the table. The Christian want everybody to be the same and kowtow to that patriarch.
That's
you
got to
be
true.
A good heathen.
Because, like, even, I mean, that's the model of evangelism, is that, like, you're befriending someone under the assumption that eventually they will, you know, your light will influence them and they will, you know, transform to your way of thinking and thought because it's naturally superior. That's an insane concept.
And that's some fucked up shit.
That's an insane concept.
That's a MLM. Think about it. That's MLMs, multi-level marketing schemes. That's the and if that ain't the American motherfucking way.
Dang.
I'm selling you something under the guise of friendship. Right? So you got to be a good heathen. I don't want to sell you nothing, baby, but I want you at my table so we can break some bread and have some fun, right? So that we can get to know one another, so that I can see like what we can build together, right? Because we are building. Community is about building something. It's an ecosystem. So that if some shit hits the fan, you know I got you for X, Y, and Z, and I know you got me, right? Like this is how, this is community. And sometimes community ain't always going to be friends, right? Because you can have friendships and friends everywhere, but who is your community that you got you locally? Who is the folks? And you know, and you can have friendship and community overlap, of course, but like we have to understand we have different networks for a reason. But then what happened? Motherfucking capitalism took networks and networking and made it a whole LinkedIn, made it a whole app. Water that shit down. Because we do need networks, right? But I think we have to really interrogate our understanding of safety and security and service and labor and stuff. This is an exchange economy, but we don't want to keep being extractive. I think we have to just start to imagine what it looks like to care for one another. Like we all live in a system that has made us all mentally unwell. So we're going to have to acknowledge, accept the fact that we are all in these kind of crossroads of messiness to me, that we're going to have to figure out, okay, we know what you don't want, but what do you actually want? And see, that's the responsibility, right? So this is why we keep in these reductive loop conversations, I think, like talking about the beginning, because it allows us to skirt responsibility of, okay, but what do you actually believe in and want? Right? Can you face yourself? Because I think that's what it is. It's the whole Diddy conversation, right? Even honestly, I'm gonna jump conversations real quick, Donnell. Cat Williams conversation with Shay Shay. I love Shay Shay. I'm gonna say something. Maybe it's gonna be a little controversial. Maybe it ain't gonna be. Overall, okay, Cat. Okay, Cat. That's fine. I'm not gonna lie, though. The underlying homophobia that is there toward the end made me uncomfortable. And I know, and it, but it's couched in a way, and hear me out, hear me out. Here's my mind.
It was a long interview. I probably don't remember the second you talked
about. Let me explain what I mean, right? Okay. I understand what he's saying about Hollywood, and when he was talking about the roles that he turned down and how he had to change that one role. I think it was next Friday because it was going to be the rape scene. And he said, why do black men have to be raped all the time? Now, I understood the one part of it. I'm not dismissing that. There is a way that there is, because it's Hollywood and the white imagination, especially in media, right? Especially in media and film, we see this kind of utilization of sexual violence toward black bodies, black men's bodies in particular, black women's bodies in other ways, right? So that's real. At the same time, though, there's an underlying theme that's there when you listen to him, when he's talking about that, they're talking about the saliva, the saliva, right, and licking, and he only likes females, you know, and saliva this, and, you know, and he, and there's like, there's an underlying way that, there's an underlying homophobia there that, or a queer phobia there that allows for this fine line to be had. He knows what he's doing. Okay. Cat's not dumb, but he walks a fine line of both telling a truth and also reproducing an oppressive understanding of sexuality and difference. Am I making sense?
No, yeah, you're making sense. I do.
Like, now, folks may not agree, but
those conversations, when they get brought up, they do. There is this underlying, it's not said in a vacuum. It's said in the context of there being a lot of thoughts and beliefs, and we exist in a culture of homophobia and all that stuff. And I feel like whenever you have those conversations, you're playing with that. It's the same thing. It's the same underlying thing that's in the conversation about who's wearing a dress and who's not wearing a dress.
Right.
Right. There's this underlying thing of like men wearing dresses and how that emasculates black men and all these different things. So there's no way you're having those conversations without, you know, making an implication or making a suggestion about, you know, homophobia and that sort of thing.
Yes, thank you, Donnell. Exactly, because there's an assumption about what then a real black man is, right? But that trope, it relies upon a white male patriarch ideal. It's just a black face on top of it. Is that what we really want? Like, because I also talked about Diddy in that conversation, right? And I really, it's also kind of irritating and also almost infuriating when people want to say, oh, they already talked about this and stuff. And the way it was talked about was Diddy's going to diddle with him, right? It was still through a homophobic, like, you know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, it's not this power dynamic of like, do y'all understand that, like, what he's like, what is really being said is that this man is so powerful, unless you kowtow to him in the most submissive and violent way possible, there is no ability for you to have true, quote unquote. That's what he's really saying, right? Mm-hmm. But we're not getting to that root. We're getting to this kind of superficial, like
it's all about him being gay and that being the issue.
It's not the issue. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's mm-hmm. not. And this is why we can allow shit to happen in these institutions, like these churches and these corporations, right? Where we have the sexual right abandoned mm-hmm. because people are too afraid to talk because of the stigma of the shame has more weight than the actual violent act itself.
100%.
You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly what I was saying earlier. Like the shame is it's so undergirded in all of our conversations and all of our institutions. Like the shame is that deep. Like I would rather over my dead body will I admit that this is, you know, that this happened to me.
Yeah.
Because the shame that it will bring on me, like the way that I know my family will probably, you know, not speak to me or distance themselves from me because of the stigma and shame around that. So it's not just about like, oh, like people are going to know. It's like, how are people going to act? Like, how is your community going to react? Are you going to lose community over this? Like, you know, like it's all of those layers. So people will really, you know, take that all the way to the grave.
Yeah.
But that's how it harms us, right? That's how it harms us, because it allows these, you know, these same behaviors to be, continue without it being addressed.
Yes. And so I think if we really want to say we want to do like kind of the mutual aid, if we say we really want to, like, you know, do commerce differently, we want to, you know, build new systems differently, and if we really can't do it at the national level, we can only do it at the local, like all these theories, right? And then we also call down our community ancestors all the time. How many times we hear about Harriet Tubman and Malcolm X and Dr. King, right? And all the folks that folks like to talk about. But I'm like, what are we learning from them that we can actually deploy and imagine so that we build right now? Like, this is the building phase. This is the creation phase. We have to create. And in order to create, we're going to have to truly believe like what is going on and understand that the only way that these systems are going to change is by us, because we're also the ones helping to uphold them. Like we just talked about this whole conversation, right? Like mm-hmm. we're the ones helping to uphold with these looped conversations, right? And the loop keeps getting shorter and shorter, making again our collective memory. So this is why we need to create, because our collective memories are purposely being shortened. So we need archives. Like we need to be talking about the old ways. Even though I don't feel it's that old not now. So old.
It's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago, but then it is, because technology has moved time so quickly, right? So now you know what I'm saying? Because like I'm born in 81. You're much younger than me, but so like in that time, it's really in between the generations. Like I do remember a time when it was just old, like there was no internet. There was like, it was a phone call on somebody's, you know, then we had the beep or the pagers. So you thought you were doing some shit with the pager now. Like it's like mm-hmm. beep, 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 you know, somebody going to, you know, a little beep thing. And then you got real fancy if your parents was able to get that phone, that big ass first phone that cost a fortune. Like, so like we literally went through technology to like, I was just talking to somebody the other day about how the whole nights and weekends, like I couldn't talk to nobody till after 7 o'clock at night. When they said 7 p.m., I was like, yes, I ain't got to wait till 9 p.m. to call your ass. Like, mm-hmm. it's like, so even how we communicate is very different. Like there was an expectation that if I said I'm going to show up because I can't get a hold of you no other motherfucking way. Mm. Right. Like, so there, and so, right. Damn. So societal norms have, but we also need to remember. Who's got to remember this, right? I remember going to the club. Yes, we used to wear business casual. I really did. I used to I have pictures of me in a blazer with a pop collar. Thought I was doing it with some big ass hoop earrings. Okay, I was doing some shit. All right,
at the club.
At the club. But it was a white one. It was a white silk pop collar blazer, you know, like big old hoop earrings, like makeup done, like big ass hair. Yes. So anyway, I used to do it, y'all. Love me some partying. But you used to go and you use, like, when I remember being irritated or like just a lot of pent up frustration or even anxiety, like, because I don't necessarily, I go up and down in social anxiety too in grad school. The minute Friday hit, I was looking for the next party. I would be going out and I would dance in my ass off sweating. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a weekend of just sweating and partying and going out and seeing who's vibing and what, and then going back to like to the grind again, right? We had different ways of building shit. This is why I'm saying we got to be good heathens again. Mm-hmm. Right? You got to be able to just be with other folks and figure out who actually is a vibe or not. Right? A real vibe, not the vibe through the phone that you can then show for an aesthetic, because that is what you think that is what a vibe is. But what are other types of vibes you can have then too? I'm just talking. So no, what you think?
It's crazy that I did not think about how technology, the shift in technology impacted how we communicated with each other and the urgency with which we communicated with one another.
It's real different.
It's very different. It's also just weird that we're in a time where people can just have access to you at all times.
That was a big shift.
And that shift, like, I think is, I don't think we realized the gravity of how that shift impacted how we relate to one another.
No.
Like, just the ability, like, where you can reach someone at all times because there's a cell phone now. They have a computer walking around in their pocket now. You know what I'm saying?
This is very new. This is very FaceTime, we don't understand how stuff, new this is. Yes.
To people all the time. Before, it was just like the frequency was. I don't know. I have to think about how what that shift did, because I feel like that. The urgency with which we showed up for one another, because we didn't have access to each other all the time, was different. And the way that we related, we spent that time with one another, was different.
It was. It's just different. It was a different thing.
Yeah.
Because I remember getting that first BlackBerry in grad school, because Verizon had a special for college students. I went to Michigan State, and I was living in East Lansing. I remember that right before I went to do my dissertation field work in the UK, it was a new thing. And I remember that was the first time that I had then my email on my phone. And so then I was getting my email on the spot. Mm-hmm. And that was that I distinctly remember my ex telling me, because we were just started dating at the time. He was like, why are you, like, he's like, you're on your phone now? Like, put that, it's like 9 o'clock at night. Put that shit, like, what do you, like, it was so new. That was a newer thing to do, at least for me. And you know, and so then now it, wow. The normalcy of that, but that was that, even texting, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I had gotten used to texting being in the UK in the little flip phone, but even those little flip phones, right? That was something that I had gotten used to living in Ireland before, the texting and stuff, you can do that. But that shit, like, it took so goddamn long on them old ass phones.
Each letter, you got to press multiple times for each, man.
That shit was real short to the point. We ain't having a conversation. You hear? Good.
Okay. Pull up, like, outside. That's it. Like, that's all you text.
That's it. Then you accidentally butt dialing somebody because the shit don't really lock. Like, this shit is, like, it's just newer, right? It's a newer world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, like, this is why we need to create, but I'm going to say this too. Like, this is why the older folks need to create. Creation is not just for the young. Creation's for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And we need the different stories. This is about storytelling. We need the storytellers. We need the people in their 30s and their 40s and their 50s and their 60s really telling the stories from their perspectives, their locations, because there are templates out there. We have to learn from one another. Right? And we have to learn from our past.
Relationship and connection, or the stories?
Relationships, connections, what worked, didn't work. You know, we need to hear all the stories. And this is the thing too, y'all. This is why we have to sit with all of our emotions. Not every story is going to make you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But the story should tell you something. You should take something from it, right? When you read stories, some of the best stories I've read, I ain't like none of the characters. Jillian Flynn, when you actually read all of her books, I remember those books a few years ago. She writes in a way you can't like any of them motherfuckers, but her shit is good. Mm-hmm. You are in, and it also teaches you some shit. Well, I ain't gonna do, you know, like, or damn, do I have that tendency? You know, like, it should, like, the work should help you delve deeper into different aspects, right? It shouldn't be this love and light, but this is where entertainment needs to then also be reinforced. Hence, going back to the whole Diddy thing, right? We have to engage how we engage with entertainment and what is entertaining us and why, because we need the stories. So people need to start creating. We need to take back the power of the story and the storyteller and entertainment and start to create. It ain't got to be good. Come on now. Half the shit we paying right now ain't good.
At all.
You know what I'm saying? Half the music we listening to ain't good.
I mean, that everybody complained about how bad Mea Culpa was, but Mea Culpa's the number one movie on Netflix right now. I haven't seen it. It's bad.
I watched it. Yes, I watched it. I was on a date. I watched it with her, and it just. I said, we gotta watch it. Fuck it, we gotta watch it. And it was just like,
gotta see it through.
Why? Like, but you know what it does? It helps me realize we gotta create, y'all. We really do. We gotta take it back. We gotta sit here and just start to do it, right? Like, and I think that to me, it helps me understand, because if this is what we call Black excellence, y'all, come on now. We gotta make new definitions. Like, this shit's awful.
And it's crazy what you it's cool that you brought up the how every story isn't gonna make us comfortable. You said every story isn't going to make us comfortable, and we have to be okay with that. And it goes back to that earlier point too, though, about like our discomfort when it comes to difference and stuff like that.
Yes.
Like, I think that when we talk about white supremacy being the ocean and not the shark, like, we've adopted the right to comfort. That's a tendency of white supremacy. Like, we feel like we have a right to be comfortable and that nothing can disturb that comfort, and anything that disturbs that comfort needs to be silenced or, you know, shelved or, you know, done away with or distanced from. But it's like, no, like, the reality of the world that we live in is uncomfortable. It's inherently uncomfortable. You're going to feel discomfort, especially if we're trying to, you know, crack that foundation even further and try to rebuild something.
Yes. Donnell. And because let's be real, you ain't even comfortable to begin with. You're just so disassociated from your body and lying to your goddamn self because you're so used to it, right? That the minute that's now that you're feeling some shit, you got to actually sit in that motherfucking discomfort and realize, oh, yes, that you always had that pain, boo. It's always been there. Now you're going to listen to it. Now, welcome to being here. Like, I get it. This is why we need the community and care. Mm-hmm. Like, I realize I need to be able to call somebody and just be able to talk with them and just be myself. Like, please don't think of me as, let me just be me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is why this is fun, right? We can just talk and just, you know, be in the space together and, like, conjure and make and create, right? And I think this is what we're trying to do. Like, just be imperfect, but also still in the energy of, but I still am figuring it out. Like, I'm willing to build. I'm really to sit in the mess and muck to see what's working and not working.
Yes.
But we know we got to do something, right? Because this shit ain't working, because I can't keep having those same ass conversations.
Yeah. I can't keep like that. we'll be talking our way until, and nothing going to change. You're going to be talking for another 50 years. You know,
it's not comfortable. And it's not even true, right? Mm-hmm. This is why we need the stories, right? Y'all got to tell your stories. People got to tell their stories, because just having that out there disproves these repetitive narratives, because they are built upon lies and myths of So this reminds me, okay, y'all, I think in song, but I also think in books. So this reminds me of Paul Gilroy's concept, Post-Colonial Melancholia, in which he talks about, like, in the British context, because my dissertation was in the UK. So in the British context, like, in British Empire, it becomes this location of nostalgia for the white working class in the kind of 1950s and through 1980s. But it's a nostalgia for a past that was never really true, because empire didn't truly benefit the white working class. It still benefited the same types of hierarchical systems, right? That's really, 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 really rough representation of his dense ass work. Okay. But it's this idea of the melancholia, right? Because this is why history is so damn important, and why storytelling is so important, because history is a storytelling mechanism that brings experiences with an analysis together through a different time frame. So it's also a timing mechanism. This is why colonization is spiritual in nature, takes your relationship from that and then steals your history, because it steals your time and timing of life, which steals your connection to different logics of how we connect to one another, right? It's all related. It's all related. So when you can kind of, and even if you don't get that, it's okay. It's really about understanding that you got to take the shit back. So you got to take your time back, which means you got to take your stories back. So we have to take our time back by taking our archives back. And stories are archives, right? Like, so that we can hear from folks. Like, we need to hear the stories from the elder queer folks, queer Black folks in particular, right? Whole generation was wiped out with AIDS. Like, that really was a whole generation. Mm-hmm. I don't think people understand the devastation of AIDS, especially in the U.S.
I don't think they do.
At all.
I feel like I don't fully.
It was devastating. Like, it wiped through poppy, and people are still traumatized. Like, there are and other people who, stories that need to be told, right? And like, so I think that now is if you want to use, if people want to engage with the spirit of Beyoncé's Renaissance, right? I'm not going to deify anybody. To me, she's a capitalist, okay? I'm not interested in going to this whole beehive conversation. We need to stop deifying people externally and take the energy you're giving to them and bring it back to yourself and ask yourself what you can create. Mm-hmm. She put the energy out there of a Renaissance. She's working with the energy of an actual communal spirit. Sorry, my internet. So she's working with the energy of an actual communal spirit, because we had a Renaissance. Renaissance itself is not just from Enlightenment. There has been renaissances throughout space and time, right? Mm-hmm. We've had a Harlem Renaissance, right? A Renaissance is a resurgence, right? It's a conjuring of people coming into different creative modalities and expressing them as a way to both express the times they are in, but also to bring into them spaces, new futures, new ideas, all kinds of different experimentation. It's a time of experimenting. It's a crossroads, right? It's a fucking energy. So instead of giving it up and debating about whether what she's doing is kind of, those conversations are meant to be reductive. We know good and goddamn well this shit comes from, always has been, and always will be from Black folks' labor, along with the, quite frankly, indigenous understandings of land, right? So it's always going to be there. That keeps you in a loop. Understand that, take the energy and conjure. What are you creating? What can you be audacious with? What can you audaciously take up space in and do and create, because you know you have every goddamn right to? Right? Take and work with the energy. Stop giving it away to somebody else who already has it and already told you what they're going to do. They're going to take it some more and keep it in their own goddamn legacy. Period, point blank. She's already set for her legacy. That's fine, right? What are you building? What is your legacy? Especially if you don't want to be it through a capitalistic means, then babe, you got to create that shit now.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. I think we're going to be doing this more often.
We should. Well, yeah, let's stop. I be getting it. Weed does not calm me. It kind of just gets me up. All right, I think we're going to end it there. Anything you want to end with, Donnell? How can folks reach out? How can folks get a hold of you? How can folks support your work?
Just support my work by, you know, I'm on the Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. I don't be on Twitter that much, though, because since Elon took over, I don't really be over there that much. I just go over there and see if it's news, but other than that, Donnell Writes, Donnell Writes, like with a pen, and you can find my work there. Go to the link in my bio, and consider a donation to support my platform as I expand into other modalities and stuff like that. So looking forward to doing more creating for y'all.
Yes. And I'll also have all of that in the show notes, y'all, as well. So you can go directly to Donnell's work and support him. And I mean, I have fun. Let us know if you had fun with this and if you want to see more, because we can definitely make this a recurrent segment of our episode or part of the show, because it's always nice to talk with somebody while also having a little smoke and chill session at the same time.
Indeed. I really enjoyed this.
Me too. All right, y'all. Remember, keep dreaming, keep exploring, because it's through the imagination that we can create the futures we want in the present. Till next time.